from stpetecatalyst.com.
Joining me on Startup Report is Brad Kugler, who's the CEO and founder of Direct Mail 2.0. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, Joe, for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm a fan of the show.
We like fans. Thanks. So let's dig into Direct Mail 2.0. You sell mainly, so you're B2B, and you have an add-on service for direct mail operations and direct mail agencies and people that support direct mail.
Very good. In fact, you're one of the few that gets that the first time. We are a marketing technology company that is an add-on for direct mail. So we like to look at ourselves as sort of a bridge between the offline and the online world. So we take traditional direct mail, ink on paper, and what we do is we layer about 7 digital services simultaneously with that direct mail piece. And we have been achieving anywhere from a 20 to a 46% lift in engagement and conversions over direct mail alone.
You know, obviously attribution is sort of the holy grail of direct mail, right? So how much of that do you attribute to better attribution, and how much of it do you attribute to actual increase in conversion?
Actually, the statistic I'm giving you of the 20 to 46% is based on ROI. So that would be absolute attribution to direct mail. So we've had case studies where people have been doing direct mail for years. We take that same direct mail, we layer on our services, and that's the lift we see in their return on investment. So it's really an easy product to sell. You'd think about it because you're telling a person who's spending, let's say, $5,000 a month on direct mail, and you tell them, well, listen, for an extra 10 to 15%, if I could get you a 20 to 46% increase in return on investment, does that sound like a good idea? I've yet to hear someone say no.
So really, you're revealing that it actually works better than people knew.
Absolutely. Direct mail, by statistic, is a much better response tool than any digital advertising. You know, the response rates of direct mail, if you're mailing to a list of customers or a list of known prospects, right, you're seeing anywhere between a 7 and a 9% response rate. If you do a blast email, you're lucky to get 1% to 2%.
Right. And so how do you, how much of, obviously, I guess I should say, the people that are in the business know the business. Your customers would be selling direct mail, know direct mail. But at the same time, a lot of them maybe are selling a full suite of options, digital and direct mail, whereas yours hits that sweet spot with direct mail. What's the educational hurdle with potential clients as far as letting them know that, hey, direct mail is still alive? And do you, because of that educational element, do you find that older businesses are easier to land than newer businesses?
You know, you touch right on the heart of probably the biggest barrier. The biggest barrier is the understanding. If you have people, direct mail is a traditionally very old business. You've got second, third generation families running print shops, letter shops, even big corporate print facilities. And they have been sort of almost the dinosaur. So as the digital revolution happened, whereas they may have upgraded their equipment to digital presses, they've never really jumped in with both feet into the digital advertising world. They don't deliver these services. They don't have the resources. They don't have the manpower. Their ownership says, we got to keep these presses running. So what we've done is we've come in and said, yeah, you just upsell this. We'll do all the digital work. We'll manage the ads. We'll place the ads. All we're going to do is we're going to give you all of the KPIs that show what that piece of mail is doing in real time. So this is something they don't have the resources or expertise for. So it is a pretty easy sale once they understand that they need it.
All right. So ironically, it looks like the education lies more in the resellers than the actual end clients.
100%. And what we do as a channel sales model is we will co-sell for them. So I've got my sales team, their channel sales managers, and we will get on the phone with their client as their sales engineer, and we will explain the product. Because someone buying a, I don't want to call it a sophisticated piece of software, but from the vantage point of someone who's been ink on paper for 25 years, this is a steep hill to climb. And they have a hard enough time just selling their ink on paper. So we will sell the digital aspect of it. And, you know, our closing ratio, when we get on the phone with their clients, it's like 50%.
Yes. So can you dig in a little bit to how it works, how you get that attribution?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, there's seven different aspects to what we layer on top of a digital campaign. The first thing is mail tracking. You can now track mail the same way you track a package, right down to delivery. So we're providing that in real time to the client. One of the first things that most direct mail senders have always said is, gosh, you know, how do I know the mail even went out? You know, well, we can show you down to the guy when he got it. So that's a first point of whether you call it warm and fuzzy, but then there's confidence the mail's actually going out. We integrate with the U.S. Post Office to get those stats. We also participate, and we're one of the largest participants in the program of informed delivery. I don't know if you're aware of that, but I think it's the greatest thing they've done since the self-adhesive stamp, where you don't even need an email, but you can get an email to the recipient of that piece with a graphic on it that shows what's coming in their mailbox that day. So if I wake up in the morning and I'm checking my emails, I get a scan of everything that's going to be in my mailbox that afternoon. Now, what they've done is they've created that digital scan and they've created it linkable. So here you've got an engagement point from your mail without even receiving your mail or having to open your mail. So that engagement point is the first trackable attribution, because I can tell you who got an email from the post office, who opened that email, and who clicked on that email, tracking it back to the mailing list. So here is, boom, first one, attribution proven for certain pieces of mail. Now, I can go into the other ones, but we have call tracking, where we track and record all calls and provide all demographics.
Right.
We have a Google retargeting campaign, where the first thing we do is a few days before the mail, we start blanketing those zip codes with banner ads. Then those banner ads drive someone to a website.
Mm-hmm.
Once they go to the website, they're retargeted. So what they're doing is they're getting that imagery 5, 10, 15 times. So everyone agrees that a sale is made in the 5th to 12th contact. By the time they've finished a 30-day campaign with all the ads from this program, they've probably seen it 30 times. So it's ingrained into the mind of the recipient. We do the same thing with Facebook. The other thing we do with Facebook, which is unique, is we take the mailing list, even without a phone number or an email address, and we match those to customer profiles. Now, Facebook doesn't tell us exactly who matches and who doesn't, but now we're delivering those ads to people's Facebook streams before they even get the mail. So again, before you get the piece of mail, you're starting to get an instant recognition, subconsciously, if you call it, so you're more likely to react. The other thing we do is we actually put a pixel, a very special pixel on their website that some people like to call it an IP appender or a reverse device IP, a reverse device ID appender. And we actually take those identities and we match them back to the mailing list due to a full attribution that says, yeah, Stan Smith from 123 Main Street, he was on your website and here's the pages he visited.
Right.
We provide that file so they can do very targeted follow-up.
So in these types of businesses, the problem, or not the problem, but you know, the question is, where does it end, right? Because you're educating people. So obviously with a lot of your agencies, the resellers, and maybe the direct companies, if you're talking to them about this aspect of social media, if you're talking about this aspect of their emails or retargeting, then their question is, well, you know, I don't know social media. So that's, you know, it's almost like that fits with somebody who has a social media strategy, that fits with someone who understands retargeting, right? But a lot of these times they're not going to. So then it kind of comes back on you. And so it seems like a lot of times these efforts expand into almost services that you have to tack on to let them use your tools.
And, you know, a lot of times it's actually, we get more pushback and saying, listen, we've got our digital team. They're already doing that.
Okay.
So that's more of the objection they have. And it's really easy to add. I said, are you guys coordinated with what the print guys are sending out and what's going on? So, no, they have their own schedule and we have ours. Okay. It's wasted money. So our point is our initiative with direct mail does not interfere or affect their existing social media or online campaigns. This is just an enhancement to their direct mail side. And the best part is it doesn't conflict and it doesn't use those resources. You pay the printer or the agency who's doing the direct mail campaign, like I said, a 10 to 15% premium, and you're getting an entirely add-on digital campaign that's synergistic with what they're doing on their direct mail side. So there's no harm, no fall. It's actually an easy argument to counter. And like I said, it really is an easy product to sell once they understand it. Everyone believes omni-channel marketing is the way to go. You can't do one channel and expect to get to nirvana.
And omni-channel, the retail industry obviously seems to be the most turned on to that.
Yeah.
And then other industries are still just finding their way to that, it seems like.
And I would say that our sweet spot is probably has been the local service providers like the landscaping service with multiple locations or car dealerships. These are the guys who do a lot of direct mail. They believe in it and it works for them really well.
So let's look at the company itself. How long have you been going and what was sort of the genesis of it?
The genesis was a friend of mine who I've known for probably 25 years, Joy Genduza, has quite a large print marketing company in Clearwater called Postcard Mania. And I was in between, I have two or three businesses, and she called me up and she'd been using a semblance or an idea of this product in her business for a couple of years. And she wanted to spin this off as its own company. And, you know, I have a little gray behind the ears and she seen me build some successful businesses and I was deep into e-commerce and digital marketing. And she's like, hey, let's spin this off into a real business. So I jumped in because I love technology and it was fledgling. It was like one or two employees within her business. And that was early 2017. I think it started officially in 2016. And, you know, we've grown to, I think we'll hit almost $2 million this year in our third full year.
Right.
And I'm absolutely intended to keep that doubling track going.
Wonderful. So what does that look like? Are you, you know, as far as expanding, how does that play into your sort of raise future or how we get that growth?
Well, the growth is obviously without capital injection, it gets tougher. We are, you know, on a slight burn to break even sort of trajectory. But, you know, I know that I could, if I could go lose another $1 million or two, mm-hmm. I could again double or triple this business in 36 months. So I kind of go back and forth on that because in one sense, the bootstrapping is working, but it's going to impede the growth trajectory at some point without some kind of injection. So I'm talking to some interested people that understand our industry, and I'd be looking, as much as I'd be looking for cash, I'd be looking for that strategic partner that can sort of bridge us into other verticals and add something as a strategic partner as much as they could add cash.
And you, so since you have the platform up and running, you're really, it's just that growth phase now where exposure is the name of the game and getting in front of as many people as possible. And because you said your close rate is excellent and it has self-evident value once people can get it in their heads in the right way.
Absolutely. But, you know, I wouldn't call myself an absolute perfectionist, but digital marketing is an ever-evolving technology. So when I first helmed this business, it was 3 digital products. We're now at 7. I actually have plans to go to 9. Mm-hmm. So it's becoming this marketing suite that sort of is, you know, it's a living, breathing thing. So I'm never kind of satisfied to say, hey, the platform's done and it's,
right.
You know, we're definitely past a beta test. I'll give you an example. I mean, we now have at any one time over 700 campaigns running on our platform. When I first started the business, it was about 25. We've had scaling issues. So we're rebuilding the platform to handle up to 2,500 campaigns at any one time. So there's things about the platform that are always being refreshed. And I mean, that's another area that I'd be able to explore some investment opportunity for.
If you, just because I know a lot of folks that watch the show would be interested in your strategies for growth. So assuming some of that, you know, the $1 million comes in, you put some of that towards the platform, refactor and get that to a place where you're happy. You have a little bit carved out for some new products going from the 7 to the 9. And I'm assuming a decent chunk of that will go into the gaining that exposure and getting those eyeballs. How specifically, what's sort of your strategy for getting those eyeballs?
You know, we found The thing that works, there's three things that have worked best. One, direct mail. We believe in our own product and we use it.
Oh, okay. Of course. I have to say it. Sorry, you can eat your own dog food, right?
Yeah, exactly. We absolutely do that religiously.
Right.
The other thing is trade shows, which are very expensive. You know, our product is not just a free try it for 30 days. There's a little more to it. It requires a face-to-face. The third thing that I want to expand on, we are becoming, you know, granted there's people smarter and brighter than us, but we're becoming pretty versed experts in the area of digital marketing. We're to the point where we're being asked to give keynotes and talks about omnichannel marketing and integrating different digital type strategies. And we've just started some webinar series. You know, we're launching a political product with these 9 features. And we just sent out an email this morning and got 100 signups already. So there's obviously a thirst to how to pull this together, how to do omni-channel marketing with both offline and online. And I consider us the experts in this. So I want to put out a weekly or monthly webinar series to drive this traffic. And that could require a team of 2 or 3 people to really build this.
And there are some, you know, there are some examples. HubSpot, one jumps into my head, of people who have carved out an area. And now, you know, I've gone to their inbound conference in Boston, which is thousands and thousands of people. And, you know, it's a huge event, a huge platform that's just growing and growing. And so are those now, have you sort of reshaped from this utility to
a community like that? It's interesting you say that. You know, this is one of these things where if you have a good team and they'll present you ideas that are really valuable. About 2.5 years ago, my team said, let's have a conference for our partners and our licensees. I'm like, oh, we're no one. We're tiny.
Right.
And it was really popular. We got 100 people to come and pay and spend a weekend with us going over product and digital marketing. That thing has grown now. We're expecting 200 people. We have it on Clearwater Beach at the new Wyndham. And it's expanded beyond just our users. And it's actually a great way to get people together and network. And it's not even just about getting us new business. It's the exposure and the community that it builds, we found is just as valuable as any prospects or new business that comes from it. So yeah, we call it Market Edge, catchy name, and Clearwater Beach in November.
Wonderful. All right, well, and let's say as we finish up, we have investors, and I think we've covered some of that. We also have founders and folks that are earlier in their journey than you are. So what are some thoughts you'd give to them as you've grown and exited a couple of businesses?
Gosh, you know, it's hard to boil that down to one thing, but you know, people ask me that, and I would say that, you know, you learn more in the tougher times than you do if your product is selling off the shelf and you're making money. It's when the things are not going well, they're not selling, you've hired the wrong people, you're having trouble covering your payroll, where you really get smart and you really try to find the solutions. And if you persist through those barriers, you learn how to prevent them from happening again in the future. So fail quick and fail often, as they say. I mean, there's some real truth to that, you know, and persist through it.
And one other thing you mentioned, which is interesting, is how you're at a spot where you're growing, your organic growth is okay, it's acceptable, but you also see that if you take some equity, you could push that a little further. You know, you talked about being a little bit further in your career. So the idea of speed is appealing. Maybe if you're early in your career, it wouldn't be as appealing. So
right.
What are some of the, you know, the back and forth you go to as far as raising versus not raising?
You know, it's hard to say because I hate putting my personal interest ahead of company interests, mm-hmm. but you know, having been entrepreneurial for the better part of 30 years, I mean, my original business, I came in, it was already doing $1 million, but I'll be honest, I wrote it up to $25 million. And because of product disruption, I wrote it back to all the way back to zero. So the thought of missing another exit mm-hmm. is never going to happen to me again. Also, honestly, the idea, my passion is now moving as I'm later in life in more of an altruistic fashion. I love to help entrepreneurs. I love to work in education, and I would love more time to spend on that. So if I can go from this exit to being a mentor or advisor or even an investor for other companies, that would be the best way that I can extend my legacy. So in a selfish sense, I want to move this exit within the next 3 to 5 years so that I can go and do those things.
And not to revisit a darker period, but the 25 million you wrote went back down to zero. Obviously that hurts for a number of reasons, but can you talk about the specific pieces of it that stand out to you the most as that were the most painful?
Yeah, it's I have to attribute it was probably one of the hardest times in my life, but also one of the times that I grew the most as an entrepreneur. We were selling CDs and DVDs online, and we were having amazing success selling on Amazon, selling on destination sites, selling through other partners. And that market evaporated to the disruption of the technology, Netflix, Apple, it's obvious. So as you have an infrastructure that's supporting 25 million a year, and it's evaporating at the rate of 30, 40% a year, there's no room for mistakes. The emotions, I was in business with my brothers, that gets testy. It really raises you to the level of, this is where you can either let it go to hell in a handbasket, or you hold it together as long as you can and try to work out a solution. Because you're dealing with the lives. I had 55 employees at the peak. And the most heartbreaking thing is those series of layoffs as the business shrank.
Sure.
And the best I could do was manage it with some sort of as much finesse and professionalism as I could.
Sure. And it offers an interesting case study because that's an industry change, but it's one you had some awareness of. So do you remember sort of your awareness trajectory?
Oh, absolutely.
So when did you say, man, this is going to be an unrecoverable change, or did you have hope until the very end?
We knew the change was happening. I would say that even early 2000s, when the internet was booming, it was like, oh, you're going to be out of business. I mean, we knew it was coming, but our revenues and profits were continuing to rise all the way up to 2012. And in 2010 to 2013, we were reinvesting a lot of those profits. We were getting into other product lines. Mm-hmm. We were opening retail stores for these other product lines. We were even investing heavily in R&D to see if we could become a sub-licensor of Hulu and Netflix content. We had deepened negotiations with their very C-level execs because we were going to kind of focus on a documentary educational model because we were selling a lot to schools and libraries. Right. And we went very far along on that. We were going to contracts and we thought that was going to be our savior.
Got it.
And it came down to a legal problem. Netflix and Hulu did not have the right to sub-license their products without going back to all of their content creators and renegotiating it, which would require new advances, which we looked at the projections and education is not big enough to justify those new advances. Right. So when that kind of fell off as our last hope,
right,
it was more about managing the decline than anything else.
Got it. Very interesting.
Yeah.
I appreciate you sharing your story.
Anytime.
And it's always great to have repeat entrepreneurs in the area. And I certainly look forward to a big exit and then you coming back into the community.
100%. I can't wait for that.
And growing into the next generation.
Thank you again, Joe, for the opportunity. Appreciate Thanks. It.
Brad Kugler, Direct Mail 2.0 on Startup Report from PitchList and StPeteCatalyst.com.